Welcome to this afternoon's NAESP webinar on A Principal's Guide to Early Learning and the Early Grades. At this time, I'd like to introduce Dr. Gracie Branch, NAESP's Associate Executive Director for Professional Learning. Hi, Gracie.
Hi, Honor, and thank you so much. We are so happy to have everyone with us today. We have three outstanding presenters that are going to talk about our recent released guide that we did with the National Center. So today we have Dr. Christy Cowers. Dr. Cowers is the director of the National P3 Center School of Education and Human Development at the University of Colorado Denver. And also presenting with Dr. Cowers is Dr. Roberta Ballard. She's the Research to Practice Associate for the National P3 Center at the University of Colorado Denver School of Education and Human Development. And last but not least, and on the other side of the country, we have Dr. Jeannie Allen. Jeannie is she's in the state of Alabama, and she is the director of innovation there in the Department of Early Childhood. So welcome, Christy, Roberta, and Jeannie.
Thanks for having us, Gracie.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So we would like to see who's with us today. So we're going to start with a poll. And we would just like to know what your role in the school district is, or in your state, or in the nation. So if you can fill out the poll so we can determine who's in the room today, we would greatly appreciate it.
Great. And by way of conducting this poll, one of the curiosities that we have as we're going to move through the next hour is to see the variety of folks that have joined this webinar, because one of the key principles, P-L-E-S, one of the core values of P3 work or pre-K through third grade work is it can't be done alone. While the guide we are about to share with you is focused on principals, P-A-L-S, an administrative role, we also, throughout the guide, really emphasize that principals should be working in collaboration with others, both at the school site, in school districts, and in the state. So it's for that reason we're curious to see who has joined this webinar today. Great. So it looks like we have a majority of principals or assistant principals joining us. That's fantastic. And then we also have a good mix of state level folks, as well as nonprofits, teachers, and higher ed are all about equal. And then we have a bunch of other. This tends to be true in the P3 space. And sort of glancing at the chat, it seems that we have some district level coordinators, we have funders, we have deans. So this is a nice robust mix of folks in the room. Thank you for all joining us. Okay, so let's get started and really dig into the new guide that has recently been released between NAESP and my center, the National P3 Center. This is an update to a guide that NAESP has produced for nearly 20 years now. The first version came out in the early 2000s, and then it was updated in 2014. And given both the shifting landscape of P3 work in the country, as well as our shifting research base about what matters most for young children's learning and development, the guide has been updated. I want to start with something that's really important to me personally and for many in the field, is that the new guide has been dedicated to the memory of Ruby Takanishi. Ruby was a number of things, a scholar in her own right. She also ran the Foundation for Child Development for 10 years. The foundation, many would argue, is largely responsible for the P3 or pre-K through third grade movement that exists now. She also produced many major studies, including birth through age 8 guides and guides devoted to dual language learners. One of the most important things about Ruby that we did try to embody in this book was two things: her dedication to using research to guide practice. that we needed to have a more robust understanding of research-based strategies that then became infused into programs. And secondly was her very deep commitment to equity and recognizing that the systems and structures and organizations that exist in this country to support young children's learning are often inequitable. Some children get what they need, whereas many others do not. So we took all of this wisdom that Ruby gave to the field and tried to infuse it into the guide. I should also note is that Ruby really started the partnership with NAESP around this pre-K through third grade work in the early last decade. All right, so let's talk a little bit more about what we're going to accomplish while we're together right now. First, we're going to give you a fairly high-level overview of the guide itself, giving you a little bit of background into how it was developed, giving you some insight into the six competencies that are part of the guide, discuss a little bit about how we see it as a tool, not just a book that we believe needs to be put on a shelf and read from cover to cover, but really as a tool to spark action and change, either at the individual level, at the school level, or at the community level. And then we're going to close by sharing a really potent example of how the guide is being used at a state level to change practice at scale, to really take a systems approach to thinking about how to better infuse pre-K through third grade across a state. So let's get started. In terms of an overview of the guide, methodology is always important to those of us in higher education. In the spirit of Ruby's memory, I also think methodology matters in terms of the grounding that a document has in both research and practice. And we at the National P3 Center took a pretty rigorous review to updating this guide. First of all, we did a very deep dive back into peer-reviewed research that has been published in particular in the last decade since the guide was last updated. We wanted to better understand what were the strategies that research is highlighting that make the most difference to improve children's learning and development and to help close opportunity gaps. We also recognize, though, that research alone is not enough, is that we also needed to be deeply invested and engaged in learning from the field and people who are doing this work and or influencing this work. So we conducted a series of discovery interviews in which we talked with leading experts at the national level who are in the practice or think tank field to learn from them what they were finding to be most effective in their work with school districts and principals. A third major strategy really came back to NAESP's membership. And we engaged with a review panel of NAESP member principals with each of the NAESP regions represented. And I see some of your names joining today. Thank you for your contributions. In which we engaged the panel to get that practitioner level perspective. Were we writing a guide that resonated with principals? Did it seem to make sense to the roles and responsibilities that they are asked to fill every day? Throughout the guide, and Roberta will talk a little bit about some of these in just a few moments, we then also wanted to create spotlights or little mini case studies or vignettes about schools across the country who are doing this hard work of creating a P3 culture and focusing on the unique needs of young children and their families. And so in this case, we conducted interviews with practicing principals to get their perspectives and have them tell the story of what they were doing in their own homeschools. And then finally, once we put all of these pieces of knowledge together, the final document went through several rounds of peer review, both from researchers and from practitioners, just to make sure that we hadn't lost any of those pieces of intention along the way. So we're really confident and proud that this is both a research-based and a practice-informed guide that is timely and relevant for principals and their partners today. Let me talk just a little bit about what is in the guide. It is divided into several key sections. We introduce a section that is talking about the importance of leading pre-K through third grade. We don't want to assume that everybody understands the really valuable time frame that this is, birth through third grade, pre-K through third grade. Nor did we want to send the signal that this is just about being a good elementary school principal. We really wanted to lean into the fact that being an effective pre-K through third grade principal is substantively different from the status quo of what many principals do, and also substantively different from just an early childhood focus or just adding pre-K to schools, for example. Because we believe child development is an essential factor of this work, we provide a brief primer on child development and early learning. What is it about child development that principals need to understand? And then we present the six competencies, which we'll talk about in just a moment. And then finally, we provide some reflective assessments. This is the action-based strategies where principals can use the tool to be reflective on their own efforts, their own school's programs and organization, and identify places and ways to improve. As already noted, we then provide a couple of spotlights where we talk about real schools doing this real work. We have an extensive bibliography and resources for those of you that may want to dig deeper or learn more. And then we have some more user-friendly resources attached to each competency. All right, without further ado, let's talk a little bit now about the competencies. Roberta.
Mm-hmm. So we have six competencies that are included in the guide, and they're all interrelated. So, you know, we started with understanding child development and its implications for high quality instruction and interactions, pre-K through third grade, because we felt like this really is kind of the important piece as far as P3 and pre-K through third grade for principals to understand, and really helps guide the rest of the work that you do as a principal and the behaviors that you take. The second competency is developing and fostering partnerships with families and communities. And this is just making sure that you're incorporating them and you're making your environment conducive to building partnerships with them to support children. The third competency is embracing and enacting a pre-K through third grade vision. And so this competency really highlights what does that work need to look like so you can embody and also support teachers and parents and students understand what pre-K through third grade should look like as far as alignment and continuity of practices for students. Next slide. The fourth competency is a new one in this guide, and it's ensuring equitable opportunities. And we felt like this really needed to be highlighted and singled out because it's just so important for the work that we do in schools and to make sure that we're supporting all students with learning and providing them with the appropriate skills that they need and just making sure that the learning environment is best suited for all kids. The fifth competency is sharing leadership and building professional capacity. So we know principals can't do this work themselves. They need to rely on and get the support of teachers who can also be leaders in their own right. And so this competency really supports principals with understanding how do you build that professional capacity of the teachers in your school in those early grades, as well as sharing that leadership so you can work through on that vision of PK through third grade. And then the last competency of the guide is promoting a culture of continuous improvement. And this is so important and really does kind of encapture all of the work that you will have kind of understood through the other competencies about just creating that culture of really trying to improve on what you have, looking at data, making sure that you're providing opportunities for teachers to plan together and support students in their learning. And so that's the six competencies. Now I'm going to kind of step through and walk through a little bit deeper into three of the competencies. They're all equally important, but we just wanted to highlight some for you just so you can get a better understanding of what strategies are, what are some of the spotlights that we embedded in those competencies. So the first competency is understanding child development and its implications for high quality instruction and interactions. And this really is competency that we felt like elementary principals, they bring with them a variety of teaching experiences into their administrative roles. And many principals were former middle school or high school teachers. But we know that for quality pre-K through third grade instruction and success for students is principals need to be able to provide that effective instructional and organizational leadership. And so to do that, we felt like principals really benefit from having a strong understanding of the typical developmental milestones that children gain across pre-K through third grade. And so, you know, we know that there's a need that often exists for elementary principals to really intentionally seek this understanding and build that understanding of child development by participating in their own professional learning on the topic. And so this competency can provide some of that for them. And so there are three additional strategies in competency one that really focus on emphasizing just the development of relationships across the building. So this could be from principals really striving to learn every child's name and the strengths that their families bring, as well as to teachers utilizing those small group collaborative learning strategies in the classroom that we know are so important and key to child development and their growth. Promoting student engagement and voice, really incorporating that small group and student teacher conversations, as well as teachers using purposeful and creative play throughout the school day, which we know is so key for student growth and development. And then the last strategy in competency one is just understanding how child development can influence student social and emotional experiences. And so we know part of the role of a principal is just to develop those daily and weekly schedules that help to provide time for active experiential learning and to incorporate methods for nurturing positive student behavior. So the strategies go deeper and they provide you with supports and just some ideas of how you can embed those strategies into your daily work as a principal. There were two elementary schools that we featured as spotlights in this competency. One was Gardner Pilot Academy in Alston, Massachusetts, and the other one was Great Work Montessori School in Lakewood, Colorado. And really the part of why we chose these schools is because they really both have a focus on using child development to guide the instructional practices and approaches that they use throughout the school, whether it's from their curriculum to even how the building might have been designed. They really want to make sure that it's conducive to those early learners, and they've taken great pride of making sure that that's a big piece of who they are as a school. Right. So the next competency that I'm going to talk through is just the embrace and enact a pre-K through third grade vision. So we know building from that current knowledge of child development, really the principal's most important leadership responsibility is building and supporting a shared vision and school culture focused around pre-K through third grade. And so if a principal can embrace and enact a pre-K through third grade vision, then they really need to understand how they have to reimagine their organizational and instructional leadership role through this lens. So the strategies that are focused in this competency really are inherent in just establishing a pre-K through third grade vision. And they focus on establishing that school-wide culture that views children's pre-K experiences as that fundamental anchor to the school's mission and student success. What children bring with them into the elementary school is equally as important as what they will continue to grow as they move through kindergarten and into the later grades. Providing ongoing opportunities for pre-K through third grade teachers to align their curriculum and those instructional practices that they use to a developmental continuum to make sure that it is truly meeting children where they are and asking them to grow in ways that make sense developmentally for them and are appropriate for where they are in their life. The third strategy in this competency is just supporting teachers to provide that high quality, rigorous instruction that is aligned to those developmental learning trajectories. So giving teachers a chance to look through and see, is this not only rigorous, but is also developmentally appropriate for where children are in their continuum. And then the last key strategy of this competency is just developing school-wide policies and programs and initiatives that contribute to that pre-K through third grade vision And if there are some policies and programs that aren't contributing, how can you remove those so that way they don't detract from the overall vision and work that you're trying to do and implementing this approach? There are two elementary schools that were featured in this spotlight as well, as spotlights as well. The first one was Gomez Elementary in Omaha, Nebraska, and Zion Chapel Elementary School in Jack, Alabama. Jeannie. And both schools have really worked to provide that continuity across the learning environments of their early grades and have focused on aligning their instruction to that developmental continuum. And so we wanted to really highlight the work that they have continued to do to focus on that. All right. And the last competency that I'm going to talk through.
Roberta, really quickly, before you go on, I just want to verbally say that we're also happy to stop and take questions.
Yes.
That might be arising. You don't necessarily have to hold them till the end. And so if there is a question or clarification, please feel free to put it in the chat and we will do our best to address it real time where there's still context for you all listening and for those of us presenting. So feel free to put any yes. comments or questions in the chat box.
Yes. Thank you. All right. I'm going to go into competency four, but again, if questions come up, I will stop and we can respond. So competency four is one we really wanted to highlight because it is a new competency that was included in this updated guide. And the goal of this competency was really to highlight the need for elementary principals to intentionally focus on how they will challenge and confront the policies and the programs and the practices that are occurring in their school that may have led to significant disparities, and really so they can focus on ensuring that equitable opportunities exist for all children in their school. So we really wanted to make sure that we singled this out and made sure we gave principals some key strategies that they could use to focus on this competency. So a key component is really of challenging and confronting the inequities is a principal's development of their own critical self-awareness and just the knowledge that they have personally of just oppression and privilege and that cultural competence. That self-development is so key in order to support teachers and staff, families, students in your school. And so, you know, for this to develop, it's really important that principals engage in professional learning and engage in conversations with their students and families, as well as teachers, just to better understand the perspectives of others from different backgrounds. Along with personal awareness, another strategy in this competency is principals then taking that information and that knowledge to establish a school culture that's open and inclusive and affirming of others' differences. And so making sure that their school mirrors the populations of families that they attend their school, as well as just really trying to broaden and make it feel as safe for families and for students to attend and access and feel welcomed and appreciated. The third strategy in this competency is examining school data sources. And getting that stakeholder feedback is so critical for elementary principals, just really to identify which disproportionalities and disparities that might exist in their school, and then identifying what resources and strategies that they can take, you know, that may be differentiated based on what students' needs are or families' needs are, to ensure that those equitable opportunities for success are provided in their school. The two schools that we featured in this as spotlights in this competency were Cherry Park Elementary School in Portland, Oregon, and Marguerite Montgomery Elementary in Davis, California. And both these schools really were chosen because they've really made it their mission to differentiate their school resources and strategies in order to support students based on need. So, you know, one of the schools instituted a program to support social-emotional skill building. While as the other school really focused on redesigning their universal classroom instruction to better support dual language learners. So hopefully that gave you some information as to what's included in the guide based on the three competencies, you know, that we wanted to just highlight and provide just a little bit more information for you.
Great. Thank you, Roberta.
Yes.
The one last piece that we wanted to just give a snapshot of is the kinds of reflective assessments. And you can see that we've titled the slide, "The True Purpose of the Guide," is really meant to be an action-oriented tool that provides enough knowledge and enough strategies for principals to be very reflective on how they are building a culture that supports early learning in the early grades, how they're supporting teachers and other staff to support early learning in the early grades, how they're building collaborations even outside of their building, and how they're transforming systems inside their schools. To help press on this, what we've included throughout the guide, there is a reflective assessment for each of the six competencies. And then we also have just combined them into a full reflective assessment at the end of the guide. And this is just a snapshot of the kinds of questions that we encourage principals to think about. And rather than providing, you know, sort of a grade or a judgment about how well principals are doing, we've really tried to make it more of a tool that incentivizes and promotes wondering and thinking about how accurate these statements are, and then also asking principals to think about the evidence that they might have that an outside person might be able to look at to see these efforts in place. The self-assessment tool can be used in a very informal way where principals just jot notes to themselves. It could also be used in a much more rigorous way where there are actually efforts to uncover and identify the evidence, to engage in staff level or partnership level conversations to think about the evidence and to create a strategic plan. So we did want to, again, signal the action-oriented part of the guide, which is a perfect time to turn to Jeannie Allen and the state of Alabama, who has taken pre-K through third grade work and this guide and been very serious about making it action-oriented. So Jeannie, if you'd share with us your experiences. Sure.
Thank you. I'm very excited to share the NAACP. The NAESP Pre-K, the Third Grade Leadership Academy, is actually part of Governor Kay Ivey's Strong Start, Strong Finish, which is the Alabama Integrated Approach to Early Learning. And it was our efforts to really start thinking about a learning continuum from birth all the way through age 8. And so I get to work with what's commonly referred to as the P3 grant. And the Leadership Academy is part of the P3 grant. The P3 process system is built around the thoughts of instruction, leadership, and assessment. And so the academy is that leadership component. To be part of the P3 grant, if you were an administrator, you needed to make application to this academy. The academy is set up through this beautiful relationship between a national organization, a local organization, and then our agency, because we don't actually deliver it. It's delivered by the Council of Leaders of Alabama Schools, and NAACP is the curriculum that they use, and so it's just been a great partnership. And so as a principal, you make application to this leadership academy, but it's not only for those in the P3 grant. It's opened up to the entire state. It's free to anybody who wants to participate, and so you're in there with possibly someone that's in the P3 school, but someone who's just decided that they needed some PLUs. That's what we call it for principals who need some more credits. And this is growing capacity across the state in addition to what we're doing in the grant. And so now what we have happening is where it started, that we had these leaders go through this because they were in the grant. We started with 35 classrooms and 7 schools. So we only had a few leaders in that first one that were actually associated with the grant. And as it has grown over the past 4 years, we now have leaders going through the school leaders going through this academy and then turning around and applying for the grant because they've learned some things about having an early learning continuum. And so it's been very exciting to not only see a principal go through,
but then they'll send someone on the district level, or they'll send their reading coach. We even have our own staff, some P3 coaches are going through it. And now I can say for the first time, someone from the very first Leadership Academy who went back and started pre-K and expanded this in their school has now applied, had no idea she applied to be a part-time coach. And so we now have seen this come full circle even for the benefit of what it's doing for us. And so today I'm excited to say that we have 79 Alabama elementary school principals who have gone through this Leadership Academy. On April the 8th, we have 24 that's in this current cohort that's going to present their capstone projects. And I don't know about you, but I am so excited to see what these leaders have done during such a time. And I almost want to record them. I'm like, you talk about the leadership that we need to know about during such time as these in this early early learning environment. I'm excited to see what we have from that. If I can ever be of any help, I would love to. You're welcome to reach out to us to know more about the design. It is pretty unique among how we know that other states have been able to do this. So it's just been great to build sustainability beyond what we may do at this grant. It's helped us think about it more as a state. What do we want to do in the early learning area? So, Dr. Cowers, if I left anything out, you're welcome to fill it in because you've walked with us through this entire process, and can't thank you enough for that.
Thank you, Jeannie. I would just want to add a footnote that the Pre-K through 3 Leadership Academy that Jeannie has just described is one of many. It's a relative word. There are approximately 15 or 16 other P3 leadership programs around the country. This is certainly the most robust, led at a state level with a really intentional coaching aspect. But I do just want to note that several of those other P3 leadership programs also use NAESP's guide as part of their curriculum. So it's definitely a tool that is being seen as not just, again, a book to put on the shelf, but as a learning process to engage principals in deepening their understanding and then deepening their efforts to support early learning in the early grades.
So, Dr. Cowers, we do have a question in the chat box that I thought would be great to stop and ask. They're asking, how are the competencies getting into the hands of higher education? How are we really kind of spreading the word about the new competencies?
Yes. That is
that information out there.
Yeah. So Gracie, you and I can maybe both tackle this a little bit. I would clearly, we are in higher education at the University of Colorado Denver. So we are delighted to be in this space working with NAESP on this. I don't want to sugarcoat it. Higher ed is probably one of the most conservative enterprises on the planet. And so getting higher ed to shift and change is a long-term vision. I do know that we have some really visionary places, such as the state of Illinois, and I believe we have some Illinois folks on the call who may want to add additional context in the chat box, who have taken an approach to changing legislation that governs all institutions of higher ed to say that child development and other pieces need to be a part of every institution of higher ed's principal preparation programs. So they've sort of dangled this carrot, and now IH institutions of higher ed are having to catch up to meet those requirements. Specific to these competencies, I can speak on behalf of my own institution, which does prepare principals, is that we are in conversation with our education leadership folks to begin to shift the content of our principal preparation programs to ensure that not just NAESP's competencies, but sort of a more robust vision of P3 work begins to make its way into the curriculum, not as a one-time lecture, but as a thread throughout? So for example, in their entire course of study, are they not just hearing about P3 one time, but are they learning about P3 throughout? So I think it's a great question who asked that. And I would say we need all of you on this call to help to push some of these efforts up and out. Dr. Steve Tozer, I see, has just chimed in with some Illinois perspective. And I should acknowledge, since he is chiming in, that he's been one of our peer reviewers in this process. So thank you, Steve, for joining us today.
And Christy, I would just also like to add, just from NAESP's perspective, and Jeannie did a great job about talking about our pre-K leadership academy, but we know that our academy, even though the model has been set up to really be a, right now, it's been a collaboration typically between early childhood part of the state departments of education. And of course, in Alabama, we have the state administrators association that have been a part of the collaboration, but we are poised to come to school districts. I think that we have the capacity now with the advisors, the number of advisors that we have trained. We know, I think it could be a great set up for a consortium of school districts that would be in close proximity to each other. And we're also looking at ways, as always, to put our trainings virtually online. And that's what the great thing about the Academy is. It is a blended learning model. The coursework is in Canvas. We have two courses, and it's been that great combination of face-to-face before COVID and then the virtual component. But I think one of the strengths is having those trained advisors that are there to work with the small group, smaller groups of principals as they divide up and select the competency that they want to take their deeper dive into. And I think that's been a very integral part of the work of the Academy. I'm not seeing any more questions in the chat, but something that I thought that people might need a little bit more information or be curious about is what we've learned over the years about the impact of high quality pre-K on a student's long-term success.
Gracie, I will answer that in coordination with another question that did just come up in chat about the recent Wallace Foundation report tied to how principals affect students in schools. So our report was actually finished production before the Wallace report came out. So we cannot list it as an explicit resource that we refer to. And Roberta, you can feel free to chime in here as well. That said, when the Wallace report came out, we felt very assured that we had covered all of the right buckets in terms of principals' roles and responsibilities. Here's though where I want to make a differentiation between the two. And I said this early in my opening remarks. What the Wallace report does not do as explicitly, and where I think the field has been pushing us over the last decade, is that this kind of pre-K through third grade reform is about more than just adding pre-K as something that principals need to know and understand or to even have co-located at the school building. A lot of the P3 work is really emphasizes the importance of pre-K, which, Gracie, I'm going to come back to answer your question, which is clearly essential. What the NAESP National P3 Center Guide emphasizes is that that is a necessary part of being an effective principal. Absolutely, you have to understand the importance of pre-K, know how to support those teachers, know what quality learning environments look like. And you then also have to fundamentally shift kindergarten, first, second, and third grade to also be reflective of child development, to also be reflective of the kinds of vertical teamwork needed with pre-K, kindergarten, first, second, third grade teachers. So there's a qualitative difference here between just being a strong principal and being a strong pre-K through third grade principal. So now let me circle back and Gracie, answer your question, is that one of the things we've heard from many of the principals we talk to, including Roberta on our staff, who was a practicing elementary school principal for 12 years, is that principals don't often get any professional development, much less current professional development, related to the how young children learn and develop. And what we know from brain science and child development is that the kinds of environments and pedagogical experiences that young children have are different from those that older children succeed with. Having a deeper attention to relationships, a deeper attention to the interconnectedness of development, whether it be academic skills, social and emotional skills, executive function skills, and even physical development. Remember, in this age range, kids are still learning to write and hold pencils. And so ensuring that principals understand what normal child development looks like and in culturally responsive and supportive ways, that they then begin shifting what they do inside their school buildings by way of vignette. I always think about in the days when we could travel, remember those? In our P3 work, I would often visit elementary schools. And I can't even count the number of times I would be doing a walkthrough with an elementary principal. And we would go past a pre-K classroom or even a kindergarten classroom that was a little noisy. From the outside, might have seemed a little chaotic. But the kids were buzzing and active. And the principal would say to me, oh, we'll come back when she's teaching for me to observe the classroom. And as a child development person, I realized that teacher is working her behind off right now. That is probably a really highly effective classroom right now because kids are actively engaged. They're in centers. They're playing while they're learning. Those kinds of learning environments and pedagogical strategies don't just belong in pre-K, but also belong along a continuum in the K-3 years. Did that adequately answer your question, Gracie?
Yes, it did. And we've had several more in the chat box. So one that was asked, is this professional development a part of the universal pre-K that is being proposed for federal funding? And I'm not sure about that. Christy, you may know more about that than I do, but I do know that the states that we've been in have used part of their PDG, their preschool development grants to help pay for the academy. I would assume that this new funding that's being talked about would be able to be utilized, but I do not know that for sure. Do you have any more information about that, Christy?
No, and I'm not entirely sure what the question is referring to. There's certainly huge stimulus funds coming out from the federal government to support the mixed delivery system of early childhood. And I see another question coming that I want to address in just a moment. And some states are proposing universal pre-K initiatives, but I'm not exactly sure what a federal universal pre-K initiative is. So Nancy, if you want to provide any additional context, I'm happy to try and more specifically answer your question. But to a question a little further down from Susan about including the various early childhood sectors, and Jeannie, I'll let you answer around the academy. I can tell you in the guide, you are going to find the full array of early care and education programs discussed. So not just school-based pre-K or state-funded pre-K, but also the importance of building relationships and building collaboration with those programs and kids that a principal might literally see every day inside his or her building, but also those that they may not see. So local Head Start programs, childcare programs, family childcare, because one of the factors that we really want to press on in this updated guide is that all of those kids, wherever they are when they're four-year-olds, are going to be coming into kindergarten classrooms. And so principals should be trying to figure out and should be caring about all of those different learning environments and learning programs that children are in the years prior to kindergarten entry. So at least in the guide, they're absolutely engaged. Jeannie, I'll let you or Gracie answer about the academy.
So currently in the academy we have, it has not been where someone in the childcare has actually applied or a Head Start has applied. But we have had, when the pre-K is in the school, we've had people that have applied that may not really be associated with anything but the pre-K to apply. We have found this to be so successful that we did sort of pivot and think, hey, maybe we should think about a 0 to 3, 0 to something, you know, leadership academy there. We are thinking about, wondering about, and Christy's been so helpful with this as well, could we have this all inclusive in the current system we have built? Because that's what you want. You want everyone there together building this very good, this robust ecosystem of early childhood, right? But I will tell you something interesting is that over the past 4 years, well, 3 years, we hadn't had the fourth one yet, the capstone projects, every year we have principals who do a capstone project on that transition component of reaching out to the other, those providers who feed to their school. So we know that it's on everybody's thoughts and minds to bridge this together. So there's more to come, but I can see how this document, this academy could easily be all inclusive. I really do see that. So Gracie, you may want to add anything I left out, or did I answer that as in a helpful way? Okay.
Christy and Roberta, one of the questions that came in through the chat, and this I'm sure maybe on a lot of people's minds, but looking at the change between the new guide compared to the 2014 guide, a lot of people have the 2014 guide. So what were those elements that we felt needed to be updated and kind of the rationale for that?
Roberta, do you want me to start or do you want to start? So a couple of big ones. The most notable one is the, I don't want to say elimination, that's a little too strong, but we dropped one of the full competencies from the 2014 guide and replaced it with an explicit competency dedicated to equity. As we were writing the guide, we were living through both the COVID-19 pandemic and the pandemic of racism. And these are issues that I think have always been present, but have been especially elevated in the last 18 months or so. I would also argue that so much of the research is also highlighting that all means all isn't necessarily the best approach to thinking about equity. We certainly want all children to have high quality learning opportunities, but some children need to have different kinds of opportunities than others. And so we really felt compelled to include a standalone explicit competency related to equity. A couple of the other notable changes are we reordered the competencies a little bit. We actually did, we feel they are all equally important, but we also wanted to sort of scaffold an approach of child development has to be the foundation. If you don't understand child development, you're not going to really get all of the rest of the things. So that got moved to the first one. And then I would say a third major change is, I call it code switching, is wanting to be more explicit that we weren't just using early childhood speak to convey the importance of these years, but also trying to put it in K-12 speak. So in other words, in many of the sections, we talk about the challenges of principals having to balance teacher evaluations, school improvement plans, science-based reading initiatives, recognizing that this pre-K through third idea isn't the only thing principals are being held accountable or responsible for. And so we tried very hard to sort of make pre-K through third grade not so much as of an initiative that principals take on, but a mindset that drives all of their work across all of these different efforts. Mm-hmm. I think those are the big ones, but that was a good question. Steve can always be counted on to ask the hard questions.
So Christy, for those principals, this was asked in the chat, that taking out the Principals Leadership Academy, what other great, and our new guide, because we know that's a great resource, but what other resources are there out there for principals that really have no, they didn't get their bachelor's in early childhood education, haven't been through that kind of coursework at the university level? What other resources are out there? What are the best recommendations for them? Mm-hmm.
So we do identify a couple of resources in the guide, and we were very dedicated to making sure that we were finding open access resources. So you just have to click on a link. You don't have to purchase a new anything. So there are some in the guide. Of course, I don't have the guide right in front of me, so I can't tell you explicitly what those are, but we can put those in chat or make sure you get those. I would also encourage many of you to find the early childhood organizations in your own state. Many states have branches of AEYC, the Association for the Education of Young Children, who often have resources, annual conferences where, you know, you can join workshops and whatnot. And then I would also say, and Gracie, this is a bookmark for us, is that both of our websites try to provide additional resources and places to make this easy. If you're having a hard time finding it, that is not helpful. So you can, and we'll put up our contact information in just a moment. Our National P3 Center's website has some additional resources, and we can make sure that you're appointed to other ones as well.
Someone wanted to know what NAEYC, we were trying to get that in the chat box for them. If they weren't familiar with that association, National Association for the Education of Young Children.
So there's a national branch that would be NAEYC. But then, for example, right. I live in Colorado. We have a CAEYC, which is the Colorado Association for the Education of Young Children. Jeannie, I'm not sure what Alabama's is, but I know that there are state affiliates in every state. Yeah. Judy has also put in the chat exploring the pyramid model regarding social and emotional development. This is another space where we lean into throughout the guide, is that social and emotional development is essential in this time frame, as is executive function, because what we know is that children's dispositions and ability to attend to tasks, to self-regulate their behavior, to hold working memory so that they can, you know, follow instructions, all of these are essential school success strategies as well. It's not just about learning to read and learning to write. So you'll see that also throughout the guide, is that for all of these young children, age 3 through age 8, is the intersection or the whole childness of learning and development.
So we have about 5 minutes left, and I thought it would just be great before we put everybody's contact information up, if you just kind of left them with your best advice or words of wisdom in relation to either utilization of the guide or early childhood education in general.
Okay, so I'll go first. That means Roberta and Jeannie, I'm buying you time to figure out what your answer is. So I think my big takeaway is both about the guide and about the time that we're living in right now. and I alluded to this earlier, is that all of this was important before, but I believe the pandemic has escalated and elevated the importance of us paying attention to this. So for example, pivoting to fully online learning for sixth graders was hard enough, or fifth graders. I'm trying to think in an elementary school time frame here. So upper elementary kids, that was challenging enough. Thinking about pivoting to fully online learning for pre-K or kindergarten kids, they're squirrely enough to, you know, sit still face to face, figuring out the right strategies to support the unique context of young children and supporting their families to support the learning, I think has really elevated the importance for all of us, the collective we, to deepen our knowledge about how young kids learn and develop and how to establish the schools, programs, and classrooms that are going to best support them. And I think this guide is an essential step to helping us get there.
I would say, as a former principal, and helping to write the guide really helps broaden my knowledge, but also just reflect back on my years as a principal. And I think the importance of this guide is to just jump in and start using it. Start, you know, choose one competency or two competencies and really think about the work that you're doing in your school improvement planning and how you're supporting teachers at your building and figuring out ways to use this to just change the frame that you see the work that you're doing every day. Because, you know, I think it's just like Christy mentioned, it's a mind shift. It's not going to feel drastically different. It's how you approach the work and how you approach supporting teachers and how you approach supporting student learning and, looking at, you know, student, the classroom environments and the learning and the curriculum that you're choosing. You're just using it through a different lens. And I would say just jump right in and start using the guide. It's going to be so beneficial as you start going through.
I'd like to add that, you know, Alabama has recently adopted a literacy law. And so from a state level perspective, now more than ever, not only have we been through a pandemic at the same time that happened, but it's been so, we now have principals saying things like, I know we're not going to give up, but we know what's right for children, right? So they're the game changers out there. When we have this law, we have this expectation, we all agree with that. How's the best way to do this in this early childhood environment, right? And so it's the principals who are I would love to say that it's the state level, but we have a principal who applied to be part of the program, part of P3, and he has come up with the most innovative way. It's all because he was in the Leadership Academy. I am convinced he has gone back to his school. He is a champion for early childhood. And yes, he's got to meet this, and he's come up with a design where he's creating a K-1-2-3 family, an early childhood family, and he's advocating for certain assessments in his school, and at the same time, advocating for all children to be able to read. So, you know, I'd love to say that on this state level that I can be the game changer, but it's the principal. It's the principal breathing life into those teachers, responding to the laws and needs of the children in the community. I feel like what I get to do is just pave some way, you know, what can I do to help you get there? Can I have a seat at the table? You know, what can I do? Tell me your needs and let me go see what I can do at the state level to help you get there. But if you don't have the leader in the school who's looking out for the young child, it's very easy to put the wrong supports and processes and things in place. So.
Well, I want to thank our panelists today. You can see the contact information for Dr. Christy Cowers and Dr. Roberta Ballard at the National P3 Center. And our next slide has the contact information for Jeannie Allen. And then lastly, if you need to contact me at NAESP, this is my contact information. And we really, really appreciate your time today. We're passionate about the work of pre-K-3, and I don't think we could have had any better information that was shared today than we had from our three panelists. So thank you again for being here.
Thank you for your leadership, Gracie.
Yes, thank you, Gracie.
Thank you, everyone.
Good collaboration. Thanks, Tracy.